You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
For a long time, the talk on the ground in BC is that arts, social, transit, and community programs were going to face a funding freeze after the 2010 Winter Olympics. But those deep funding cuts are already here for the arts community. The BC Liberals announced drastic cuts for the arts and cultural sector in the budget last month, and arts organizations are reeling. Am Johal is a community organizer and longtime critic of the 2010 Olympics. He's chair of the Impact on Communities Coalition, and he wrote a commentary published on rabble.ca and on VancouverFreeSpeechZone.org. And he joins me this morning. Hi, Am.
Hi, good morning.
Now, what kind of cuts are arts groups facing immediately?
We're seeing cuts in 1 year of roughly 50%, and then going into the second and third year, it's actually going to between 80 to 92%. Originally, they thought they were only going to be 20%, but it's much larger. And around gaming grants, they did move back from the three-year commitments they had made, but many of the organizations get gaming grants on an annual basis. It's a part of their core funding. And, you know, we're talking about $20,000, $30,000 grants to really small organizations that have budgets of less than $100,000. So just in the last two nights, the Festival of Artist-Run Centers was going on. It's called Swarm. And many of these organizations are facing massive cutbacks. They may have to lay off staff, and some organizations may actually go down. Organizations like the Helen Pitt Gallery that has been in Vancouver for 35 years may not have the ability to make their rent. And I think this is an incredible attack on civil society. It's an attack on democracy. It's an attack on a vibrant public sphere, which is, you know, why societies the world over fund arts and culture. And many of these institutions are also the feeder system for, you know, new students when they come out before they show at the Vancouver Art Gallery. It's these artist-run centers that have shown virtually any Vancouver artist that's known internationally today. So when we cut that kind of infrastructure, it makes it less sustainable for people to be here as well. And so it's just really, really devastating.
Is it mostly the small budget arts groups that are affected then? Or does it go across the board?
It goes across the board in terms of the cuts, but disproportionately the impacts are felt on the smaller organizations.
Because they have that smaller budget.
Exactly. It's a greater percentage of their budget that's being cut through gaming. But when you get into next year and the year after, the actual BC Arts Council budget goes down to just over $2 million. Like, you would have to go back to the 70s.
From what was
it used to be around 20, and with the Olympics coming here, it was increased to around 40, sort of one-time things. But it might mean that the BC Arts Council may actually no longer exist. And so when you're looking at small arts councils around the province, pottery clubs to music societies that are so important to the cultural fabric of the province, particularly in rural communities, that without funding, the money to travel around the province, it really erodes our ability to communicate with each other. And, you know, these are incredibly regressive. We'd have to go back to the early 80s when you see large cuts during the restraint period. And I think that there really needs to be a great level of anger about this. It's not a time to be neutral, because it's not just cuts to a sector. It's really a devastating attack on a sector, which may mean that many of these organizations will no longer be here. And they have a rich, rich history.
My understanding is that the provincial government funding for arts was already, when you compared it with other provinces with the same level of budget, low.
That's right. It's one of the lowest in Canada. I don't know quite where it fits in, but I know it's in the bottom two or three provinces across the country in comparison to places like Ontario and Quebec. Even on a per capita basis, we don't compare. And I think the other economic kind of arguments that the government brought in, you know, first of all, all of the studies have shown, you know, at a bare minimum, the arts bring back $1.38 for every dollar that's invested in. So there's great economic spin-offs. also with these organizations, when you put money into them, all of the money gets spent in the fiscal year. You know, these are low-wage salaries often for directors and other staff of these organizations. They put on events and shows, so they hire contractors and others. So all of that money goes back into the economy. And during a time of recession, it makes basic Keynesian economics that it's good to have investment where you're going to get return on investment.
So they're not kind of frills that we can't afford in a recession.
Exactly. And one of the comments that the housing minister made, who's responsible for gaming in question period, was saying that there's only so much gaming funding to go around, and which kids program, which child meal program would you cut? And I think it's a really false argument to get into this idea that artists are taking food out of the mouths of hungry children. You know, we've had the highest child poverty rate for 6 years running in the province due to a chronic underinvestment, and it's not an and/or question. Just a couple of days ago, and yesterday actually, in 24 Hours newspaper, they had a photo op with the premier at the old convention center that had just been renovated, and it's a beautiful mosaic by Susan Point. But the entire renovation of the convention center costs $38 million, this giant subsidy to the tourism sector, and that's larger than the entire BC Arts Council budget. And so when we're talking about the size of our entire budget, it's such a minuscule amount, but the impact of these cuts is literally affects hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And these are already, as I said, low-wage workers. Many of the directors of these organizations are producing artwork on the side. They generally are in credit card debt and other kinds of things. So we're really talking about, you know, personal bankruptcy for some people, let alone organizations going under.
Why do you think they went for the art sector?
I think that they went for the art sector strategically because the government felt that the art sector was weak, in the sense that the government felt that they could cut and make room in their budget in terms of the competing interests and choices that they were making, that they could take the public blowback that would come from the art sector. The art sector traditionally hasn't been aggressive in terms of lobbying. They tend not to venture into politics because they do get public funding. So I think that they made a strategic calculation. I think also governments of all political stripes, when they think of arts and culture, they think of the Vancouver Art Gallery or the Vancouver Opera, the kind of big institutions. And so people who get involved in public life tend not to, in a fairly deep way, understand the role of arts and culture. And it's such a small part of the budget. It's not healthcare, and it's not education or the larger kind of budgets that we see. At the federal level, I think there's a greater understanding, certainly in provinces like Quebec, because of the French language culture and others, there's much more of an importance placed around it. But here, during the last federal election, for example, the largest all candidates meeting in the entire province was at the Stanley Theatre. There was about 500 people, but that was part of a national group that was happening in Toronto and Montreal and other cities. Provincially, arts and culture didn't really come up during the election. There was commitments made that you know, budgets would be maintained, so there wasn't a lot of discussion of it at all. And so I think I think it's something that the arts and culture community needs to understand, in the sense that it's always important to be part of the political debate, even if it seems like the funding is there, because right now, when we're having sort of death by a thousand cuts, where you have school parents associations to school lunch programs to library funding cuts happening, it's very difficult to capture media attention when there's so many cuts going across the board. It's a very similar political environment to 2001. And so it's going to be really important to bring these groups together so we're not fighting each other in terms of deciding what's important.
Is that process happening? Are people coming together and kind of avoiding, managing to get around the divide and conquer kind of strategy?
Yeah, certainly there's a natural alliance around library cuts and arts and culture, even though they're different ministries. I think that there's a strange coalition forming around the province. You have the HST issue, which has people from the right to the left organizing around it. You know, the arts rally just last week had 1,000 people there. You know, this is one of the larger rallies we've seen in the province in a very long time. So I think there's some real excitement around being able to organize, and also, you know, more actions that are going to take place. I think it's important that people who are involved in the art and cultural community do engage in political protest and be very vocal, because without doing that, the cuts are not going to be reversed. They did move quickly in terms of reversing the three-year grants, but that was more of an issue around the fear of government that they would get sued for the commitment that they had made. But these, you know, one-year cuts, for example, are they've been going annually, year after year. Organizations expect them, and it's part of core funding operations. We had the minister yesterday in the newspaper saying that there's this culture of entitlement. We're seeing this new language coming in that we've seen in Alberta. We saw it in Ontario when Mike Harris was there, and I think we really need to, you know, take the lead in challenging this language and defending what is a really important part of a diverse public sphere in the province. And I think that these simplistic phrases that are used to speak to the broader public are always a challenge. But everyone needs to do a better job of explaining what they do to the broader public. But there's no reason for us to take a defensive posture when a minister is taking the axe to essentially an entire sector.
Well, this is so ironic when we're supposed to be welcoming the world. I mean, that's what we've been told over and over about people coming to Vancouver, and then to come to a city which has had its culture kind of chopped off at the knees.
Mm-hmm. And the province in this budget just increased the tourism promotion budget abroad by $38 million. Once again, it's larger.
So spend more money to tell people to come here, but then when you come here...
Yeah, there's no art sector left. There's no art to see. And, you know, obviously the expenditures around the Olympics are, you know, a great thing to contrast around the cuts that are happening to our basic public services. You know, $900 million for the security for a two-week party, let alone the costs of infrastructure like speed skating ovals and luge tracks, which are could be white elephants in the future. And I just think, you know, if we can spend that kind of money, rent three cruise ships for the RCMP to be here, you know, this is such a small amount of money. And, you know, quite frankly, the public would be totally welcoming of a budget which was, rather than $2.8 billion deficit, run a $2.9 billion deficit and protect these public services, because we have a momentary revenue shortfall. It wasn't that governments were spending too much money. That's not why we're in this situation. We've had a collapse of the economic situation, which in 2 or 3 years will be back on stream. And I think attacking this vital infrastructure doesn't just mean that in good economic times that we can just resurrect it and make it happen. That these are organizations with institutional memory and histories
that cannot easily be resurrected.
That's right. And I just it would be a really sad thing to see some of these organizations go. And it's you know, even thinking about how much we do take many of these organizations for granted, and how, you know, many of the people who decide to make a life in arts and culture already are. In terms of taking that $20,000 or $30,000 they get from gaming, they're able to get matching funding from other places. It's a way to bring in other economic players to the table. And, you know, people are overworked, they're underpaid, and they're in it for the passion. You know, this is for what we get for the small amount of public money that goes into arts and culture. I mean, this is just an unbelievable shot against people who are overextended and making great work and really dedicate their whole lives to a profession that is, they're not doing it for economic reasons, certainly.
If people wanted to plug into a protest around the arts cuts, which organizations are kind of leading, or is there a coalition forming?
Yeah, the Alliance for Arts and Culture has been organizing some of the larger rally, like the one last week, and they're also lobbying the government, but also smaller organizations like the Pacific Association of Artist-Run Centers. People can contact Jonathan Middleton at the Orr Gallery, and some of these smaller institutions will also be taking their own actions as well in the coming weeks.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Am Johal. He's the founder and chair of the Impact on Communities Coalition. He's also a columnist for rabble.ca, where you can find his commentary.